Try counting that. Seriously, try tapping a steady beat. You can't. The meter shifts almost every bar. 2-3-2-2-3-2-3. The accents land in unpredictable places. That was Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, the section called The Sacrificial Dance, and when it premiered in Paris in 1913, it was rhythmically unlike anything audiences had ever heard. Today, we're going to understand why, and develop the rhythmic ear to hear what Stravinsky was actually doing.
You already know your time signatures. You can feel the difference between 4-4 and 3-4, between a march and a waltz. So we are going to skip the basics entirely and go straight to the techniques that make classical rhythm genuinely sophisticated. Hemiola, cross rhythm, additive rhythm, and rhythmic augmentation.
Hemiola.
This is the most common rhythmic trick in classical music, and once you hear it, you'll catch it everywhere. Here's what it is. In triple meter, 3-4 time, the music suddenly regroups so that two bars of three feel like three bars of two. Instead of 1-2-3, 1-2-3, you hear 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. The downbeat shifts. Your body, which was swaying in threes, suddenly wants to march in twos. It creates a moment of gentle instability, like the floor tilting slightly under your feet.
Brahms is the Hemiola king. He uses it more than any other major composer. It's practically his rhythmic signature. Listen to the third movement of his first symphony. The movement is in three, a graceful, lilting triple meter. But at certain phrase endings, the accents regroup. Listen for the moment where the waltz seems to stumble into a march and then stumble back.
Did you feel it? That moment where the triple meter seemed to thicken, to resist itself? The notes were still in 3-4 time on paper, but the accents grouped in twos. That's hemiola. It's subtle. It doesn't sound like an error or a disruption. It sounds like a deepening, a momentary complexity that enriches the texture. Brahms does this in almost every piece he writes. In the Hungarian dances, it's even more pronounced.
The Hungarian dance number 5. It's in 2-4, but the accents keep slipping. Strong beats land on weak beats. The phrases group in threes against the duple meter. This is cross rhythm and hemiola working together, and it gives the music that irresistible sense of rhythmic energy, like the music is arguing with itself about where the beat is.
Next, augmentation and diminution. These are compositional techniques, ways of transforming a rhythm. Augmentation means stretching a rhythmic pattern to twice its original length. Quarter notes become half notes.
Diminution means compressing it. Half notes become quarter notes. Composers use these to create relationships between different sections of a piece.
The most powerful example is Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which we studied in the motifs lecture for its pitch content. Now let's hear its rhythm, the famous da-da-da-dum, three short notes and one long. In the first movement, it's fast, urgent, hammering. But in the development section, Beethoven takes that same rhythmic pattern and plays it in augmentation, stretched out, in long, sustained notes, usually in the horns or low strings. Simultaneously, the original fast version continues in the violins. Two time scales at once, the same rhythm, fast and slow, layered on top of each other. That's the development section. The violins are playing the motif at its original speed, but underneath, the lower instruments are playing the same pattern stretched to twice the length. It's like hearing a conversation between a child and an adult saying the same words. The rhythm is identical, but the scale is different. This is augmentation in action, and Beethoven uses it to create depth and momentum simultaneously. Now let's go to the most radical rhythmic innovation of the 20th century, additive rhythm. Everything we've discussed so far assumes divisive rhythm. You start with a steady beat and divide it into equal parts. 4-4 time, the bar divides into four equal beats. 3-4, three equal beats. The beat comes first, the subdivisions are carved from it. Additive rhythm works the other way around. You start with small cells, a group of two, a group of three, and add them together to build bars of irregular length. 2 plus 3 equals 5. 3 plus 2 plus 3 equals 8. But the internal groupings are asymmetric. The accent pattern is unpredictable.
Stravinsky's Rite of Spring is the landmark piece. The sacrificial dance, what we heard at the top of the lecture, builds its meters from cells. The bar lengths change constantly. 3-2, 3-2, 2-3-2. The dancers at the premiere literally had numbers written on the floor to keep count. The conductor had to beat each bar as a unit because there was no steady pulse to subdivide.
Let's listen again. This time, don't try to find a steady beat. Instead, try to feel the accents as they come. Each heavy chord is a downbeat, and the silence or lighter notes before the next heavy chord are the cell. Some cells are two beats long, some are three. Feel the asymmetry.
This is rhythm as physical assault. Every chord lands like a blow, and you never know exactly when the next one is coming. It's visceral in a way that regular meter can never be, because your body can't predict it. Your nervous system is constantly being surprised.
This is why the premiere caused a riot, not just the dissonance or the subject matter, but the rhythm. It attacked the audience's physical sense of order.
Finally, let's hear the opposite extreme. Rhythm as pure, unshakable structure. Ravel's Bolero. One rhythmic pattern, played by the snare drum, unchanging for approximately 15 minutes. It never varies, not once. Everything else in the piece changes. The melody passes from instrument to instrument, the dynamics grow, the harmony thickens, but the rhythm is an iron grid. Ravel proves that rhythm doesn't have to be complex to be powerful. Sometimes, absolute rigidity creates its own kind of tension. The tension of waiting for it to finally change. And when it does, in the last few bars, the effect is explosive.
That snare drum will play that pattern for the entire piece. Let it sit with you. It's hypnotic. And it's the rhythmic opposite of everything Stravinsky does. Rigid, where Stravinsky is volatile. Predictable, where Stravinsky is chaotic. Both are masterful uses of rhythm. They just have completely different relationships to your expectations.
Today connects forward to the advanced rhythm lecture, where we'll cover metric modulation, a technique where the tempo changes by mathematically pivoting from one subdivision to another, and isorhythm, a medieval technique that Messiaen revived in the 20th century. It also connects to the Stravinsky composer portrait, the Brahms portrait, and the rivalries lecture on Schoenberg versus Stravinsky, where rhythm is one of the battlegrounds.
Check yourself. I'll play two excerpts. One has a clear, regular meter you can tap your foot to. The other has irregular, additive rhythm where the beat shifts. Which is which? First. Second. The first was the Blue Danube, regular triple meter, steady as a heartbeat. The second was the Rite of Spring, additive rhythm, no steady beat at all. If you could feel the difference in your body, one inviting you to waltz, the other keeping you off balance, then your rhythmic ear is sharpening. Your assignment. Listen to Stravinsky's Rite of Spring all the way through. Don't try to analyze it. Don't count. Just let it hit you physically. It's about 35 minutes long. The first half is eerie and building, folk-like melodies layered on top of each other. The second half is where the rhythm goes to war. By the end, you'll understand why this piece changed music. The file is in your library under Stravinsky. Take it on a walk. This is music that matches well with physical movement. I'll see you next time.